Hey everyone, welcome to the tennis.com podcast. I'm Nina Pancik, joined by Irina Falcone. Hey Irina.
Hey, how's it going?
Our special episode today features Fabrice Martin. He's a 34-year-old French doubles specialist, ranked number 26 currently. I caught up with him at World Team Tennis in West Virginia a few weeks ago. We talk about the French Open, his tennis career, and how doubles in France is kind of underappreciated. This is a guy who reached the final of the French Open last year with Jeremy Chardy and just reached the Rome final with Jeremy as well. So he's going to be kind of a favorite in Paris, his home slam. It's a pretty cool conversation. But Irina, let's catch up with you before we get into that. You're fresh off the US Open commentary gig. How was that?
It was a lot of fun. The one thing that I can probably say is that I learned a lot. There were just so many things that I wasn't aware of that you had to be conscious of. For example, when I was in a host position, they were like, okay, friendly reminder, don't say anything like today, tomorrow, right now, or earlier, or anything time related, because you never know who's watching at what like time zone they're in. So that was one thing that I was like, ah, oh, makes perfect sense, but you just don't think about it. And then another one was never say he or she, because you have to be able to talk about the person that you're like talking about, because in case someone is not watching necessarily the match. And so just little things like that, that were brought to my attention that made me a better speaker. But it was really cool. Just the fact that I was able to commentate on girls that I've played before. I think there were only two girls that I commentated on their matches where I hadn't played before. So everyone else, I was like, oh yeah, this is probably a good time for her to use her big serve or her big slice or this and that. So it was fun.
It's fun hearing players who get to do commentary because it seems like a natural transition or a natural, even a side gig for players. I know Bethany Maddox-Sands did it. Nick Monroe is doing it now. Tons of players have and will do it. Did you enjoy it? Would you do it again?
100%. One of the things that they said as I was leaving was like, next year we'd like for you to do more of the digital media side of it. I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's awesome to hear. So when you have that feedback, it's really good. And that was the one thing I made sure to ask the producers every day. I would be the bothersome commentator girl, the rookie pretty much, that would come every day and be like, tell me how I can do better. Tell me how I can do better. And then I was very adamant of the fact that if I'm better, it makes them look better because it's their show. So we were all in agreement, and it was a lot of fun. I got to work with some really high level professionals and commentators. So part of it was intimidating, but it was fun to just dip my feet in there.
I heard you a lot, so I enjoyed it. I thought you were great. If that means anything, it should, but it was
fun. There's been a few people that have come up to me and they're like, oh my God, I heard you on ESPN3, or I heard you on this channel, or I heard you on this one. I'm like, oh, cool. Because you just never really know who's listening. And even if you post about it, some people might not get access to it. And, you know, it just depends on what, what channel you have, and all those things really take part. So, but it's always fun to hear feedback, whether good or bad.
How weird was being on the U.S. Open grounds without fans? Because the French Open coming up, it's going to have, I think, 5,000. They're changing it every day. But right now, it's 5,000 fans only in the main stadium. But how weird was there being no one?
It was super eerie at first. But to be honest, I think every single player can attest to the fact that it was truly relaxing. And you don't hear that when you're in a slam. You think of the stress and the drama and the crowds and all this stuff. And especially with New York. But being able to just go on the grounds and see multiple like Grand Slam champions walking around, absolutely no care in the world, just like moseying on, knowing that there's no one that's going to come crashing into them or, you know, chase after them for autographs. I think a lot of players were very relaxed in that sense. And the USTA, ATP, and WTA did such a good job with making sure that safety was the number one priority. So I think that on top of the fact that they were relaxed, everyone was just, it was a great environment. I still can't believe they pulled it off, but they did so beautifully.
I agree. I also can't believe they pulled it off pretty seamlessly. There's obviously a few hiccups, but it seems the French Open will be a whole nother beast, especially because, like I said, they're going to allow fans. I don't know how they're going to plan on keeping them separate. Maybe obviously barricades sounds like an obvious way to do it. What's your take on the French Open happening this late? I mean, it's going to be cold.
That's the one thing I've actually spoke to quite a few people, and they said that it's already like, it's not necessarily like, oh, it's a little bit chilly in the afternoon or in the night. It's getting up there. So it's only going to get a little chillier, but players adapt. I've played last year in Houston and it was, I think, 41 degrees out Fahrenheit. So that's pretty darn cold. And I remember like they were saying that all the rules went out the window in regards to leggings and like sweaters and stuff like that, because it's like, hey, if you want me to come out here, I'm going to wear everything I can to stay warm. So all these players, they're going to adjust and they're going to adapt. But yeah, I'm very interested to see how they're going to be able to pull off so many fans, and you know, fingers crossed that they are able to just keep everyone safe.
I think players are just eager to get a chance to play the French Open no matter what time of year it is. The weirdest thing for me, especially from a coverage perspective, we'll be doing this all over again in May. It just seems really quick, right? If it all stays how it's supposed to the next year's schedule, like we're going to have almost like back-to-back French Opens, but whatever. So in this episode, we're going to hear from an actual French player who knows a thing or two about Paris, about Roland Garros, as someone who reached the final last year. Fabrice Martin, he was an absolute treat to interview. So let's hop into our interview with Fabrice.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey everyone, you're listening to the Tennis.com podcast with special guest doubles specialist Fabrice Martin. He's talking about how he got started in the game of tennis. Keep listening. All right, Fabrice Martin, welcome to the show. It is awesome to have you. We're here in West Virginia where World Team Tennis is happening. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
And you're a top doubles player. How did you become focused only on doubles? Is that something you started as singles and then turned into doubles, and now you're a doubles specialist?
Yeah, so basically I started playing doubles only in 2016. So I played all my career singles. So five years ago I was 28. So from 16 to 28 I played only singles, and obviously doubles, but has a second priority. So yeah, I tried my best in singles. My best ranking was 220. So I wanted to go obviously in the top 100, but I need to make money as well and make a living off tennis. So I knew I had a shot in doubles, and I knew whenever I didn't want to keep going with tennis, I knew I was going to try for doubles. And luckily, the first year I tried in doubles, I did really well. So 5 years later, I'm still playing tennis and still living from my passion. So I'm very happy to be playing tennis still.
Take me through the beginning of tennis for you. For those who don't know, you're from France. When did you start playing? How did you get into it? When did you know you were so good that you wanted to go pro? Like, let's explain that. Little Fabrice.
Little Fabrice. So, yeah, so I was born in the southwest of France, in Bayonne. And my brother was playing tennis for fun on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And one day, my mom took me to pick him up, and I just picked up the racket and started hitting against the wall. And then my mom asked if I could come and play. I was only 5 years old, and the coach, the club director said I could come on Saturdays. So I just started doing this, and after a few years, I was playing tennis, soccer, rugby, and judo. I think I had many options, and but I was obviously liking soccer, because you had all my friends were playing soccer at the time. But my tennis coach said I was good at it, and my mom kept putting me one more day during the week, and I ended up starting being pretty good off the young players from that region. So yeah, by 12, I had to stop other sports because you want to start to be good somewhere. So I only started playing tennis after that. So then we moved to the States with my parents. We first moved to Colombia for my dad's job for 2 years. So that was fun. And then me and my mom, because it was a bit dangerous at that time, we moved to Florida with my mom. And my mom is a teacher since 2001 at the IMG Academy. So she's a school teacher. But when we moved there in 2001, I played tennis and she was a teacher. So I was lucky to be part of the Bolitieri Academy. And my mom is still there now. So whenever I go visit my parents in Florida, I can train at IMG Academies.
Okay, so you grew up at IMG in Bradenton, Florida. No wonder your English is so good. Yeah.
Thanks.
Did you grow up certain players that were there? And, you know, like who were you training with?
Yeah, so I was with the generation with the Kei Nishikori and the juniors. Juniors that are still playing right now, they're not that many, but the pros were Malice, Max Mirny, Tommy Haas, the Sharapova, all this generation. And so I arrived there, I was 15, and I played some juniors, and then by 18 I had to make a decision with college or pro, and I went pro. And that was great. I moved 2 years in Miami with a private sponsor that I was lucky to have, and then I ended up coming back to IMG after that. And then I moved to France and basically did all my pro career based with the French coach. But I was still coming back in the winter at IMG to see my parents and train.
But now you're based in France?
No, I'm based in Bradenton, Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you were 18 and you were making a decision, did you ever consider college seriously? And if you did, was there a certain school you thought about?
Yeah, so my mom she's a teacher, so like school was always big. But my dad is a sport guy, so I guess he had the last word. and I wanted to go pro as well. But yeah, I was talking to a few schools. UK, Kentucky was out there, the Duke as well. I don't remember, but yeah, because I was playing juniors and there's always a lot of coaches from universities at those schools. But yeah, at that time I had a few opportunities, but I don't regret it because now I'm still here playing tennis and that's what I always wanted to do.
And you're doing great. I mean, you started the year winning a title here. You won in Adelaide, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Somehow every year, the first week or second week that I play, I've done well since I started playing doubles. So I guess my training is good in the off season, but I always start pretty strong most of the time. So this year I played with a different partner, but I tried the last 2 years I tried to play with Jeremy Shardy. So hopefully the tour starts again and we're gonna keep playing.
Okay, so let's talk about the French Open. You made the final last year.
Yeah.
And then this year, instead of having to go there in May and having a chance to, you know, reach the final again, maybe win, mm-hmm. you have to wait until September, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be different because the weather is not going to be the same. Yeah, I mean, I have such an amazing memory just being at home and making the finals of my first slam was... it was a dream come true. Of course, I was disappointed to lose the final, but when I think of all the tournament, I was the best memory of my career by far, because all my friends, my family that don't get the chance to see me play or be with me during the year, they got to see like my best results. So that was amazing. And even after we lost the finals, I think we party like we won it. So so that's something that you will remember for life. No, the those moments you share with your families and your friend, and that's priceless. Yeah.
That's so good to hear that you celebrated anyway. That's awesome. Yeah.
That was great.
You should, though. I mean, it's still impressive to make it to the podium, and now hopefully you have another chance. But I still think having it in September is going to be so weird. The weather, I mean, what's weather like in France in September? Almost October.
It'd be cold some days. Beginning of September is usually nice, but by the end of September, October, it starts to be chilly. Yeah, so we'll see. We still don't know what's going to happen, because right now I just talked to some friends in France and some cases are going up again. So I think everything can change again.
It's good that here in White Sulphur Springs, there's nothing to do. Like, it's actually good.
That's true, yeah. That's the problem with New York and Paris and Madrid and those cities. I don't know if all the players will be this way.
But it's also great because people here in World Team Tennis are focusing on tennis, right? And you've got some big names in doubles. I mean, huge names in doubles. The Bryans are here. Yeah, yeah. What is it like knowing that you have such competition? It's not, you know, it's not, these are high-ranked players. So many Grand Slam champions are here.
Yeah, that's singles and doubles. Yeah, like you said, the Bryans, for me, the Bryans have been the example for any doubles players. They are the team or the player you want to become with all the titles they have. It's tough to match them, but they're still out there. They love you when you see them after all the matches, all the tournaments they play. Like, they still have fun and they still enjoy playing. So they're great guys, and I think even singles guys can look up to them and wish they can have that spirit when you're 40 something years old.
Yeah, with kids, many kids running around.
Yeah, it's funny to see them with their family, and they're always smiling and they're always happy. It's great to see. Like, it's a pretty model family, you know?
Have you thought about how long you want to keep going? I think you're 33.
33, yeah.
They're 42, so,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, when you see it that way. But, as long as my body is fine and I don't have any kids, so that's... I mean, when you see now the players mostly travel with the kids, and they try to at least have them a few weeks during the year. So I think even with kids, it's possible to keep playing. I'm ready to go for a few more years. Yeah, hopefully.
Hey, listeners, you're listening to the Tennis.com podcast with special guest Fabrice Martin. He's sharing why doubles isn't as respected in his home country of France as it is in America. Keep listening. What about off-court interests? You know, I know there's a lot to do here particularly, but in general, what do you get up to when you're not playing tennis? I read somewhere that you surf. Is
yeah,
that true?
I love surfing. Like, I was in Florida before coming here, but the waves are not so good. But whenever there's a small, I have a friend there that lives on the beach, and he always calls me if I'm in town and there's the smallest wave, but we still go out there and still enjoy it. I'm from Bayonne, and it's Biarritz is right next to Bayonne. It's a really famous town for surfing. I'm not so good at it. I just love to just ride the wave and stand up and follow the wave. And I've always grew up being in the water. Like, my parents used to take us to the beach, and we would be 5 hours at the beach, and we would be 4.5 hours in the water. So that's the, and my dream is to have like a house on the beach and just spend a lot of time on the water. Yeah, I love it. But then I love rugby as well. I don't play it, but I love to watch. I love soccer like every French person, but it's tough to follow on the tour. But whenever I can, I either watch or I play a little bit.
Well, during the shutdown, it was 4 months. Did you get in some surfing? Because technically that's socially distanced, but the beach might have been closed.
Yeah, the beach were closed in France. But I live in... during the lockdown, I was in Montpellier in France. It's on the beach, but it's the Mediterranean Sea. So it's really flat. And they do a lot of kite surfing, but I don't like so much. But during the lockdown, I bought the rowing machine. So I bought it the first day of the, because the lockdown was pretty strict in France. Like we had to have a permit to get out of the house, and it was 1 hour of running per day, or either you could go one time per day to the grocery store and get some food, but that was it. So I would use that hour to get out of the house and maybe go for a jog, and the rest of the time everyone was stuck at home, and the police was kind of riding bikes or with the cars checking if you had a permit. So that was 2 months and a half like that. Every tennis courts were closed, every gym, every restaurant. So yeah, it was bad, because my parents were in Bradenton during the lockdown, and they were still able to go, and my friends from Florida, they could still find courts to hit, and so. But it was good. I did some good training on the rowing machine, and it got me. I don't know about stronger, but it makes you feel like how lucky we are when we are playing or playing outside or being able to travel during the whole year. We have such an amazing sport, and to be able to travel and see the world and have friends all over the world, it's so much fun. So when you're stuck in one place for 2 months without going anywhere, you feel a bit depressed, no? So now I'm back to be happy again, to be back again.
I haven't heard anything remotely that dramatic for the lockdown. Like, I know I was in New York, and then my parents are in Florida, but I haven't heard anyone explain it like that. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, it was bad in France, Italy, and Spain was the same. So, yeah, it was nothing. TV, a sofa, and we cooking and do some sports, but that was it. You couldn't do much.
It's great, though, because it does seem like everyone here is playing well and everyone's competitive. All the matches are tight. No one's undefeated, but you guys are doing well as a Freedom. So it's fun that you pulled it together.
Yeah. No, but it's very good. Like the team is doing good, and everybody's back. He's happy to be back playing. So we're really pumped.
I have one last question. Have you noticed that the British guys, there's so many British players here, doubles guys, they're all so good at doubles?
Yeah.
And I think it's because they have like Louis Kay in their corner.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And I haven't had any lessons or him on the court with me, but I hear a lot of good things from him, and he's changed the way British play doubles, I guess, because there's maybe, I don't know, five or six British guys here playing doubles. So that's impressive, no? For a small country, like they don't have that many singles players, but they have a lot of doubles guys. And even at the challenger level and future levels, British always love to play, and I think they're using Louis' technique or training to play doubles, so it's working out. Yeah,
it's good to see like doubles prioritized, you know, for a change.
Yeah, that's good, because I'm French, and in France, doubles is not seen as a good thing. I think we players don't do a good job about talking about doubles, or even when I was playing futures and challengers in singles, like players will always not make fun of me, but because I will always try to win the tournament in doubles. Whenever I signed to a tournament, I always wanted to win, whatever it was, singles, doubles, mixed, whatever. I always wanted to win. So I never got why they will play singles and go home and not play doubles, or play doubles one round and tank or go home, you know? So that's the French mentality, and still now. So, and when you hear Bartoli saying, when she says stuff like this, it's just not putting the sport going forward. It's just going back to. It's not. It's just not going. It's not good for the doubles. So, but that's for me. That's just the French people, because we have amazing doubles players, but you have none of the kids, the coming kids now that want to try for doubles career, to have a doubles career. There's not many French guys playing, but whenever we have a doubles team, they're very good. But none of the coaches, I think they think of a second option as a doubles career, which is a shame.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've noticed that there's a little bit of like a stigma around being only doubles and how everyone puts singles really high up and doubles really low. But, you know, I think the Bryans maybe have helped, and players like Bethany Maddox-Sands get that little bit more push. But like anyone can push for doubles. It's just a shame.
Sure, yeah.
There's some amazing French players too.
Yeah. I think it's the British, the Americans, the Australians, they've done a great job. Even the Indians, there are a lot of doubles players. They just see it as a different sport and a way to, you know, the Indians are very proud to have all the success they had in the doubles career, and that same with the Americans. It's just that I don't know, we don't have that mentality, which is that's the way it is. But in even in the French tournaments, you feel that it's all about the singles, and the doubles is okay. Yeah, put them on court 25.
At least it's good. You're still making a living, and you're still.
I mean, I don't care. I'm doing it for myself, and I'm still proud of my career and what I do. So, but I just think it's a shame to think this way, because a lot of people enjoy playing doubles. In France, you go to a club, everybody plays doubles. I just don't see why. They talk about doubles that way.
Yeah, and most people play doubles. Most recreational players are playing doubles. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Fabrice, thank you for your time. Yeah. It's been really, really fun getting to know you a little bit better. And hopefully, you know, we see more of you out there soon.
I guess I'll see you around. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks.
From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. You can also see the videos of our episodes on Tennis Channel's YouTube page and tennis.com's Facebook page. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer and video editor Christina Koseva, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.